Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am here with my co-host...
Kayla.
One time you should say a different name, I think.
Besides Kayla?
Yeah.
I could use Obi for these episodes,
yes,
and it would be fitting.
A good
because
alias.
I use, in all, like, video games I play... I use Obi as my, like, video game character's name. So, like, in Pokemon and Animal Crossing, my character is always named Obi. After the one and only.
After the one and only Obi-Wan Kenobi. Speaking of video games, we have guests with us today. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Absolutely. My name is Sterling Matthew Oliver, and...
I am Jacob Edelman Dolan, and this is not Above Download.
Yeah, we've never guested on somebody else's podcast before, so it's hard to introduce our show. we run a gaming podcast.
Yeah,
we're
that's
happy
what we do.
To be the first.
Yeah, yeah, it's an honor.
Hey, all right. Now, what we should do is next. Next episode that we have, we should have you guys on that one. We'll talk about all the Star Wars video games that I have not played.
I've played Lego Star Wars, and I've played Battlefront. I think that's what it is.
That's all my memories from Star Wars are from the games. That's like, I watch the movies, and I'm like, oh, this is a great level. This was awesome.
Yeah, I actually in the same boat. I played Lego Star Wars before I watched any of the Star Wars films.
Wow.
And I was going to talk about it next week on our show, is that I'm currently playing through Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, and it's iconic. They know, like, LucasArts games or whatever it is, they know how to make a great video game.
I mean, the Lego Star Wars game is, like, one of the best games of all time.
Iconic,
oh, totally.
Honestly.
One of the best video games of all
one
time.
One of the best. There's a lot of best ones, but
that,
I feel
one of
like
the best.
I feel like it's collectively one of the best.
Truly. We're starting our new series now. This is May 4th that this is coming out.
May 4th.
Yeah, happy May 4th.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, thank you for celebrating with us. This summer, we're going to be releasing a new episode of this series on the first Tuesday of every month. So we'll go through, like, each of the trilogies, and then we'll end with some of the spinoffs and shows and whatnot.
And, yeah, Solo and Rogue One.
More like Rogue Done. So this, I'm really excited about this series because it's been a while since I've seen a lot of these movies. I really, like, we were rewatching the prequels. I was rewatching the prequels for this. And I realized I'd only really seen number 2 and number 3 probably one other time. And that was a long time ago. So it was, I mean, I'd see one a lot more, but it was cool rewatching them, especially with all the memes, because,
so
like,
crazy.
I know all the memes, but, you know, I didn't remember every scene, every exact arc. So I'm excited for the series to kind of get a new perspective, hopefully, on Star Wars, because I have never been the biggest fan. I've been an average fan. So, you know.
That's so funny, because I feel like I've seen the prequels more times than any other ones, and I think it's probably because we had them on DVD.
Yeah,
and we did. I don't know that we had the original trilogy on DVD. I think we had it on VHS, and then, you know, once we got a DVD player, it was like that was out the window. And so, actually, our house got struck by lightning, and that was when the VCR.
No, the VCR just kicked the dust. That was the higher powers telling you not to watch the original trilogy and only watch the prequels. What about you guys? What of your kind of background with the prequels?
So, my parents took me to my first ever movie when I was 3, I guess, to see The Phantom Menace.
Wow.
And apparently, as a 3-year-old, I did not like it.
A valid opinion, you know.
And as a 3-year-old, I think that I had some pretty good points. No.
You were on the way home just like, you know what? That just didn't add up at all.
Just it wasn't in line with the original.
Yeah, like what was George Lucas thinking?
Shaking my little baby fist. Damn you, George. I grew up watching the prequels, and I think that I didn't know that people thought they were bad until I was, you know, older.
Same.
Well, I think that they were fun, so I watched them. You know, that's what it was, you know? And I think that, I mean, I've developed a more nuanced opinion over my adulthood, but I think that it kind of still boils down to they're fun, right?
Yeah.
So my history with Star Wars as a whole is very odd, because it started, I also started with one of the prequels, but I started with Episode 3. When that had its theatrical release, I went with my dad and my sister. I want to say, because it was late May, so I think it was over Father's Day weekend, like the few weeks after that we went to go see it. And the only thing I remember about it was thinking, oh, this is loud.
Yeah.
And just having people always also mention, oh, it's a very loud movie. You can always, it was a very small town, small theater. You could always hear films bleed over into the other houses. Yeah, so I started with Episode 3, didn't think much of it. A few years down the line, when I turned like 12 or 13, I knew I really wanted, for some reason, I really wanted a portable DVD player. And I asked my parents for a portable DVD player, and they gave me that with Episode 4.
Oh,
and so wow. I watched Episode 4 for the first time. The power went out the night of my birthday, but it came with like a half charge. And so I watched Episode 4 when the power was out. And then I didn't watch. So I'd only seen Episode 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. Nothing else until I got to college. Freshman year of college. First finals week. I really wanted to procrastinate. And so I went, I'm just going to watch all of the Star Wars movies. And I watched, instead of 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, I watched 1 to 6. And really liked it. I'd gotten into Star Trek in late high school, and so I was expecting myself to like constantly compare, but I just the entire time was like, this is really fun. I'm kind of digging it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I should say, since that week, though, I've watched them multiple times since
right.
then.
Yeah.
And I went to all of the new trilogy like the day they came out and was like absolutely in love with it now.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Yeah, so I feel like we all have a little bit different. Yeah, I definitely like I watched the first one a lot, and then 2 and 3 I watched like once. I only really watched Star Wars once, and because like I liked them, but I didn't really like fall in love with them. But I saw one a lot just because like it was just one of those that was on a lot.
I think I've seen the second one the most. That would be my guess.
Kayla was just she just loved the romantic side plot so much. It was just such a draw.
Great. Well, let's start with talking about the first movie.
You don't want to follow up? No follow up here?
Oh, are we taking an ad break here? Let's take a quick ad break.
Okay, okay.
And we'll be right back to talk about episodes 1, 2, and 3. And we're back.
So the first episode is Phantom Menace, which was released in 1999. And what we're going to do here is we're just going to start out each one by reading the opening crawl. And I think, Kayla, do you want to do the honors of being the first one to read the opening crawl?
You want me to read the first one?
I think that would only be fair.
Sure. Are you going to cue me up with some music?
Okay, okay.
Turmoil has engulfed the Galactic Republic. The taxation of trade routes to outlying star systems is in.
Just loop. Outlying
stars. We're never going to get through this.
It's a dispute.
Okay, it's in dispute. No, this is how it feels when you're trying to actually keep up with the opening
crawl.
Truly,
truly.
Like, my brain cannot process.
Time at home.
Hoping to resolve the matter with a blockade of deadly battleships, the greedy Trade Federation has stopped all shipping to the small planet of Naboo. While the Congress of the Republic endlessly debates this alarming chain of events, the Supreme Chancellor has secretly dispatched two Jedi Knights, the guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy, to settle the conflict. Dot, wow. Dot, dot.
These are always written so uninterestingly to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I read that and I was like, what's happening? I literally went into the first scene like, I really don't understand what's going on right now. This is going too fast for me.
Yeah, and that's brain. If you even got to read it all.
Exactly, like, exactly. I'm trying to process.
Imagine sitting in a theater and trying to, like, read it.
I think it was a really smart, like, idea, but then it just had poor execution.
And now it's become so, like, iconic that now it's necessary, and I just don't really feel like it is. I don't know.
Right, yeah, like, they're just doing it, like, to do it, whereas, yeah. Like, because they had to do it in the first one, because, like, it was starting in kind of the middle of, like, this whole world, kind of the world-building thing, but now, I mean, this is really, like, we know the world, but, you know, it does give a little bit of good background here, especially because I kind of forget how much these movies kind of opened the world of Star Wars a lot, you know, and, like, all the creature designs and just everything, like... It probably was pretty wild at first for everyone who was, like, coming with the knowledge of the originals.
There are a lot of world-building additions. In fact, so many that, like, I mean, looking at the, I guess, the world of Star Wars holistically, you cannot ignore the prequels. You cannot, because they lay so many, like a lot of groundwork for, like, the mythos of the world and the rules of the world. I think it's very interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. So, Noah, what's the plan here going through this?
Well, I feel like we could just kind of talk through. One thing I found was interesting is, like, obviously this was a interesting production, especially because it's, like, the first one back in a while. They had Ron Howard, Robert Zemeckis, or Steven Spielberg kind of asked to direct, but George Lucas directed instead, which is interesting because he really only directed the first Star Wars. He didn't direct 5 or 6, so...
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch, especially the progression of the three movies, like how his directing style kind of, I think, improves, honestly. I think the directing in number one is probably the worst. Two has some questionable scenes, but I think it's a little more cohesive. I don't know. The first one, I feel like the editing, too, is just very choppy.
I mean, they had the extra hurdle of episode one being one of the earliest films to use, like, full CG renders and stuff. Yeah. And I know George Lucas has always been somebody that shines more so on the technical side.
Yeah, right.
And so I'm sure that's where, like, at least 70-80% of his focus went into, was not only creating these full CG scenes, but having a full CG character. Like another one of the first times that had ever happened.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing I admire is he's always trying to push, like, a new technology with his things, which is cool. 1,950 of the shots had visual effects, I read. There was only, like, one scene which had no digital alteration, which is, like, for 1999 is really wild.
It's really ambitious.
It must have taken ages to... I mean, ILM, they're the people that could do it, so...
So let's get down to brass tacks. Pod racing, let's go.
Yes, the pod racing scene.
So good. That scene is probably, like, it may be my favorite Star Wars scene of all time.
Wow.
Like, I don't understand why we don't have, like, a whole series on, like, pod racing.
Mm.
Like, I have so many questions about what happens in pod racing, like, how this started, the lore of pod racing, like... Is pod racing only here? Is it, do they have, like, because obviously this is a pretty big crowd, but it's like, do people travel here to pod race, or is this just a local thing, or is this, like, in other what planets?
Planets.
And is that what they call them, planets?
I think so. And galaxies.
Then...
planets, systems, yes.
They, like, fly to other planets to, like, compete. Wow. I don't know. Do they have pod racing Olympics?
Honestly, yeah. You know what? I think that's great. I would love a, because I think we're getting like an X-Wing series. Am I wrong? Or like a film? don't know.
Yeah, no, something, I think that's right. Something like that. So many Star Wars things to keep up with.
Sounds good to me.
Disney, let's go all out. Let's go back to your own pod racing. Let's make a pod racing like film. Like
why didn't they do Mario Kart but with like pod racing?
Yeah.
Why was that not a game that was made?
Oh my god, that seems like
that's
such
exactly what
market.
I was thinking about, because Harry Potter had a Quidditch only game. That was one of my favorite games ever.
I think there was a Star Wars pod racing game.
No.
I wouldn't doubt it.
There was, because it's on Switch right now. It's called Star Wars Episode 1 Racer. It's on the Switch. It came out on the N64 at first. But it is a game, and you can buy it for $7.99 or $14.99 or something.
All right, don't mind me while I go to the eShop immediately.
Yes.
Well, it says here that they had a 25-minute version of the race, although the film only included a 9-minute version. Like,
what?
Where's the 25-minute cut. Give me the pod racing cut.
That's its own short film.
We can get the
hashtag Star Wars pod racing short
the
film.
Pod racing cut.
Honestly, can you imagine a digitally re-released like version of the pod racing scene, or even just like a new pod racing project with like the technology that we have today?
Yeah,
that shit would look awesome.
It said this took 3 years to make this scene, which now it's like. Mm-hmm. With the technology we have now, they could just go all out, which I would love.
Well, one of the biggest issues they would have had, in my opinion, looking back on it, I don't know what issues they actually had, but I feel like one of the biggest issues would be trying to relay the speed of it. Because working with a virtual camera, it's one of the earliest times you've had to do that.
Mm.
And not to mention you've got some real elements combined inside of this as well,
and all the ships are like super different too. It's not like you can copy and paste parts of the ships. It's just so good.
The pod racing is, it's the best part of the movie. I'm gonna
can
say
that be
right
the
now.
Episode let's just go keep on
yeah the... pod racing
whole episode on pod racing. Yes. Look, I love this movie. I'm about to make a really hot take here.
You're gonna say this is the best one?
I, low-key, this is my, I think, my favorite of the prequels.
That is heresy.
Like, out of all three, I think that this is the one I enjoy the most.
I think it's a fair one to enjoy the most.
I think it's probably less controversial than, like, saying 2 is the best, you know? So, I mean, it's, like, you know, it probably goes, like, 3-1-2 would be the order that would be, like, from least to most controversial. So, you're, like, right in the middle.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine. I just think it's so boring to me. I think this is a very boring film. I think it looks really bad, too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I love the look of the second two. I just think this one looks, like, kind of bland a little. Like, it looks very colorful, but then it looks like they have, like, a filter over it, like a sand filter.
Yeah.
The visuals don't hold up. Yeah,
it's very, very yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the yellow. Except when it goes to the Windows Vista field for that battle with the green field. I think it's definitely not my favorite. It's probably honestly my least favorite of the prequels. But this and two are very similar to me, just for different reasons.
I think that this film will always have a very special place in my heart for one specific scene, and that scene is the Qui-Gon and Maul fight. I think that scene, a lot of people call it the best lightsaber duel in the entire franchise. I think that personally, I would probably say the Red Room scene in The Last Jedi beats it for me, but this is really close, and maybe even, honestly, because I think that I could break down that scene from memory, like going from like they're in there, and then like Obi-Wan gets trapped, and then like untrapped, and then trapped again, and the fight's just happening, and then we get to that moment, and then God, I just love all of it.
I'd agree with you on, but I think there's one major thing that separates the two from each other, and I think that the newer one, it shines really well with its cinematography and its design.
Yeah.
But the Darth Maul fight, I think that shines more in its fight choreography.
Hmm.
It just really felt, I mean, of course, the new one felt seamless and like flawless in terms of how they wield things as well. But it's like just the one-on-one, you don't have a whole lot to think about while it's happening. And it's, I mean, Darth Maul's like actor is just brilliant with, with this weapon.
And I mean, I don't think that we can talk about this scene without talking about Duel of the Fates.
So
yeah,
good.
Right.
Here's the thing for me. This scene is so good. I just hate how it's edited with all the other scenes. So like they give you like 30 seconds and then it goes to like the scene, one of the fights, and it goes to Anakin. And I just want to see like, I mean, I'm sure there are cuts of it. You can cut it together. I want to see like just the full fight because it's so gripping. I mean, because these are like really the best two characters, and like Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are like really, in my opinion, the two characters that have like any depth to them in this movie, or the acting at least. So like you love these characters, but then it just keeps cutting back to other things. And it just really bums me out because I love the what they set up in the end. And it's like they keep losing momentum with going to like Anakin accidentally saving the day, I guess.
The first time that Anakin mass murders a group of people.
Yeah, wow. The first
not
time.
To be the last.
It reminds me a little bit of something I was going to talk about later on, but I kind of just want to throw it in here now anyway. And it's the casting decisions of this trilogy are very interesting, if you ask me.
Mm.
Almost everyone is established except for the ingenue leads, which is really strange, if you ask me. Maybe I think that they kind of wanted to do, I think that I've heard this from other people, so this is not my original thoughts, but I've heard that they wanted to kind of replicate the casting decisions of the original trilogy, where, you know, they had, like, everybody was, like, a virtual unknown. I think that the actor who had the most amount of work at that point was Harrison Ford, but not by a lot. And so I think that they wanted to kind of replicate that in this. And I know that, I mean, people might hate me for it, but I mean, I think that the kid who plays young Anakin is garbage.
Agreed. Yes.
I think that I should say I do not like his acting ability. I do not like what he is putting forth on screen. You know, I know that, in fact, I know for sure that he went through a lot of personal turmoil, as did many, many Star Wars actors, due to fan reactions to their characters. And I hold no ill will against the actor himself. I think his name is Jake something. Jake Lloyd?
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of it has to do with George Lucas's directing.
Yeah, writing
as well,
and direction, I think, is the issue.
Yeah, he's not somebody who would have had a lot of experience directing children up until that point.
Oh, yeah.
And then to have your movie have such a prominent child role and then choose to direct it yourself as well.
Yeah.
Is, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because I think that, you know, we look at, like, I don't know about you guys, but I personally think that right now we are in the age of supremely good child acting. I mean, you look at like Stranger Things, you look at all of the, I mean, you look at It. There's quite a lot of things coming out recently that have had, like, surprisingly very good child actors. What I'm trying to say is that I think that, you know, I don't think that there was really an emphasis on that back in, you know, 1999.
I think, too, just kind of to wrap up my thoughts on the acting of Jake Lloyd, I think it's also just very 90s acting, and this was coming right at the tail end of when that was a thing. Because this kid was also in Jingle All the Way. And he plays basically the same character. And it's like, it's just very, like, he did what he was expected of him. Like, I don't think it's like he did what he wasn't supposed to. I just think, like, the choices they made for his character just weren't good. So it's mostly this, that.
Would you like to hear my biggest qualm with this film?
Oh, totally.
That I realized when I watched it recently
is
that Qui-Gon Jinn is the epitome of a white savior. Because he walks in here and he's like, this kid has so much potential. And then he's like, I need to release him as a slave and bring him back and train him as my own child.
Yeah.
And little Padawan.
Ruins his life, pretty much.
And he did. It's all Qui-Gon's fault.
It really
is. Because let me tell you, when Anakin's, like, because he wouldn't have been a slave forever, and he was so talented at racing, at building, like, he built this whole ship pod racer thing, and it's like, dude, he could have been a great maintenance man, worked a really nice trade, made a lot of money, bought his mom out of slavery.
Wow.
He could have been a famous pod racer and, like, defended his title. Like, he was not living in the slums, this child. Mm-hmm. And Qui-Gon just decided that he was going to come in and make little Annie his mission and remove him from his mother and his home to give him a better life when he didn't even really need it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the mom just gets left in the dust, too.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, this is my, I'm pushing my glasses up moment. This is my little nerd moment. But I would argue, given the amount of midichlorians he had, that somebody would have come and picked him up eventually anyway. Maybe the dark side. And so it's possible that he couldn't have lived a regular life, but I think that Qui-Gon Jinn definitely...
He would not have escaped his fate.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, I think these movies aren't trying to paint the Jedi as good people either. Like, I think it gets clearer as the movies go on that the Jedi
are not
being painted as, like, saviors. I mean, I don't think that really was their intention, but you can read it as, like, the first hint.
It's Rey Skywalker. Her name is Skywalker.
Wow. We're not going to be able
dumbest
to get through
dumbest shit I've ever seen.
The god figures of the series, the Skywalkers. Okay, sorry. Dear Lord. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Well, Roger Ebert is right with Kayla here, because he gave this 3.5 stars, so I think you're in good
company.
Good
for him.
A king.
Look, I'm here for it. I think this movie's great. I think it's good. I stand behind it.
Do we know why he rated it so? I've never actually read his review. Was he praising the tech or?
Yeah, I think he just saw the potential in the medium.
That,
he wasn't
that
wrong.
To make total sense to me. Yeah.
He says that they're space operas.
They are
Star Wars.
I always struggle calling it a space opera because it's space isn't a genre of music. Because we've got opera, we have rock opera, and I'm just a pretentious former music student.
Space, but, they need to see lots of synths, lots of ethereal sounds, which aren't in this movie, so it's all horns.
I've always considered it just a space epic.
Yeah, epic is a better word.
That's also not, like, people call it a space opera, so I just shut up and call space opera.
I think opera is really, in that sense, they're just using it in the same way that epic is, you know, like the grand. I think space opera just sounds a lot more pretentious. Like, it sounds cooler to say opera, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
To be like, I'm watching a space opera right now. So
please don't bother me.
So let's talk about another space opera, which is Attack of the Clones.
Oh yeah, that's the second one.
Second opera. Opera number two.
The second space opera.
Do either of you want to read this crawl, or I can if you don't want to, you know?
Can I?
You can.
Yeah.
Kayla can do it's Kayla's turn.
There is unrest in the Galactic Senate. Several thousand solar systems have declared their intentions to leave the Republic. The separatist movement under the leadership of the mysterious Count Dooku has made it difficult for the limited number of Jedi Knights to maintain peace and order in the galaxy. Senator Amidala, the former Queen of Naboo, is returning to the Galactic Senate to vote on the critical issue of creating an Army of the Republic to assist the overwhelmed Jedi
Wow. I liked your ghost rendition of the Star Wars theme. I think it was really good, really
the theremin. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. This is a complicated movie in my, like, there's a lot going on, I feel like, in this movie.
So much drama.
Drama.
Okay, I just want to throw it out here just cuz I love it. Unironically, the entire Obi-Wan and bounty hunter fight.
Mm.
Do you guys know what I'm talking
about?
Yep.
Love it. Just Django, the whole, everything with Django.
I think all these movies do a really good job of integrating fan service without it seeming like really heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. And I think the Django thing is like the best example of that, because it's a great origin.
Yeah, it's this is one of the ones that just kind of like adds the most.
Yeah.
Something that I thought was really funny looking at this little fun fact sheet that Noah put together for us was the fact that episode one had a budget of $115 million and episode two also had a budget of $115 million, even though episode one got like $1 billion in the box office. I'm just surprised they didn't kick it up any. Because they are trying to do so much with episode two, you'd think they'd really want to go all in and make sure that ILM had all the resources possible to really show it off.
It's impressive what they can do with these budgets, because like 115 is a lot, but like in reality, like that's a pretty low amount for everything they're trying to get into this movie.
Because they had to put a lot into research and development, so often people just get to put it into development, but they're creating tech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, I geek out about the tech a lot.
It's very cool. The tech is honestly one of the coolest aspects of these movies, I think.
I think it's really interesting to look back at media that we now see as dated and recognize how progressive they were in certain areas for the time, right? And I think that specifically these films were extremely progressive on the tech side for the time. Do they hold up visually till today? Not particularly, but you know, at the time they were cutting edge, and I think that's awesome. You know, we don't have to think of them as cutting edge now, but contextually speaking, I just think it's really interesting.
Kayla, is this one a lot lower than number one for you, or a little lower than number one for you?
I would say a little. It just depends on the sequences, because there's certain sequences that I love in this movie. And then, like, all the Anakin, Padme stuff, or really anything with Anakin, I'm like, eh, not a fan. But, like, all the, you know, like, the sequence at the beginning where they're flying and, like, chasing down the person and, like, all the other stuff, I think that is all great.
Yeah.
I just love Obi-Wan. So anything with Obi-Wan, I'm like, 10 stars, give them all the stars.
And also, I mean, I'll be honest, I think that Ewan McGregor's performance is the most consistently good throughout.
And now we're getting a show with him, which is what we deserve. It is everything I have asked for in life. I'm trying to think of specific things in this movie.
I think this movie is very colorful, though. Like, this is a lot more colorful than the first one for me. And I really love the color palette of this one and the third one. I don't know. I don't like the way the first one looks. I love the way that this movie looks and the third one. I think it's just old enough to look, like, really saturated and a little bit, like, a little bit nostalgic, but not old enough to look like noticeably bad.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with one of these fun facts we have here, that the film was shot entirely on the 24 FPS digital camera.
Yeah.
And that opens yourself to a whole world of color correction.
Yeah. You're
not as refined to just how you record and expose the film. You get to play with it quite a bit more. Of course, this is one of the earliest digital cameras, so it's not perfect, but it allowed them to play a lot more with color, and we can see the benefit of doing that.
Yeah, and I think, too, George Lucas is, like, notable for going back now and, like, changing things, and digital film, like, with the remasters and stuff, has obviously made it a lot easier to, like, change colors and make up-res stuff, so that could play part of it too. Yeah. So there's my biggest issue with this movie is it's basically two movies, and I like what they're trying to do with, like, the very, like, bit romantic comedy kind of thing, like, very low emphasis on the comedy. And then, like, the spy, like, action movie with Obi-Wan. But the rom-com thing just doesn't work at all. But then the two of them don't really gel very much, because they're just kind of cutting back and forth, and it's, like, a little whiplashy.
It is not particularly homogenous. I agree. But it's also not, it doesn't feel like intentionally, like, diametrically opposed. It feels unintentional. I agree. It feels like two movies.
I'd just like to, you know, call you out for saying that there's little comedy when we still have Jar Jar.
We do. He made it back. He made it, my man.
Barely.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed that they, like, even dared to put him in this.
Wait, is he a senator now?
He was a senator. This movie, when they were working on it, the in-joke working title was Jar Jar's Great Adventure. Because it was a joke about the negative reaction.
That is reaction so crazy to me. I loved Jar Jar as a kid. And then, like, I got older and I realized all these people hated Jar Jar. And I was like, am I supposed to hate him too? Because, like, I just don't. Like, I mean, sure, he's not, like, as funny as I thought he was as a kid. But, like, you know, even if he's annoying or whatever, I'm not like, oh, I hate him so much.
I think that the conversation around Jar Jar Binks is really interesting. If you're talking about, like, racial politics in film, I think that Jar Jar Binks plays, like, a very odd role. Because people always make that comparison, that he's, like, some sort of, like, parody of like, a minority. And I don't know the answer.
I've got thoughts on Jar Jar, and that is, Jacob, you and I come from theater quite a bit, but we see it with Greek, Roman theater, Shakespeare as well, where we've got these clown characters that come out in the early parts of the work, and they're there just to lighten things up, because without Jar Jar, after pod racing happens, we don't get a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and again, so they combine this, like, clown character, this trope that, you know, hits some of the things that it needs to hit, with the fact that it's, again, one of these earliest full CG characters. And so they're trying to combine, I think it was the perfect trope to have done that with. Because if you wanted to have a full CG character be somebody who needs to carry an emotional arc or pass on, like, a lot of important information or something, it would just get really difficult to deal with.
Well, yeah, that's a really good point, because I mean, with the digital modeling, they can have Jar Jar Binks do lots and lots of, like, ridiculous physical comedy stuff.
And they do.
It's the same with the two droids, you know. But I mean, maybe the technology really wasn't particularly advanced enough for, like, complex characters at that point. That's a really good point, Sterling. Sorry, I just never even thought about that before.
It's gonna go to my head, so thank you.
Good. It should.
One thing that bothers me about this movie is that people tend to, as I've seen, like Padme a little more, and then they're like, oh, Anakin was so bad, whatever. And the fact that, like, major red flags, and then, like, he murders all the sand people, and she's just like, it's okay, sweetie, it's fine, like,
enabler,
you know. Yeah, she's just enabling his behavior. Yeah. So you could blame it on Qui-Gon, and you can blame it on her.
I think we need to also blame Anakin for his actions, though. I mean, he did kill a village of people. Yeah, I think in this movie, I honestly would take young Anakin's acting over this acting in the second movie, I think.
He is so terrible.
Literally some of the worst. I mean, it's one of the worst scripts I've ever heard.
So bad.
But you didn't want to, like, run the scene again and maybe get another delivery kind of take.
Yeah, he's going to be in the new series, and I'm, like, wondering how that's going to go. Has he taken acting classes since then? Like, what is going to happen?
So I have not watched anything that he's come out with post Star Wars, but I have heard through the grapevine that it is better. From what I understand, a lot of people are saying that he might mirror the Robert Pattinson journey post Twilight, where you know, I mean, post Twilight, Robert Pattinson began doing some weird shit, and that weird shit paid off.
Yeah, I would say he was always regarded in the same vein as this Hayden Christensen performance.
Which shows you how much it is in the directing and the script, you know? Like, obviously Hayden had nothing to work with in terms of, like, actual lines to deliver with this.
I don't know. I mean, Ewan McGregor also had some pretty bad lines, and he still knocked it out of the park. So it's like, I feel like Star Wars, and in this trilogy especially, fell on a lot of, like, and I don't know if George, I don't know how the casting process worked for this, but, like, fell on casting people that had a certain look instead of casting people for the role, like, that they should be in.
Yeah.
And I feel like Hayden Christensen is just one of those where, like, you kind of have to just get past the bad acting, because in the third one, he has really nice hair. And you're like, you know what? He has good hair and his acting is bad, but I can't complain because he looks good. And he's wearing he's all really, black.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's quite pretty.
Yeah.
He is
very bulked up for the third one.
Something we have to look forward to with, like, the upcoming Disney Plus stuff is that we will have producers and directors that will know how to do it.
Yes.
I don't think people put enough stock on how much a good director will just improve a performance tenfold.
Yes.
And so we've got that to look forward to.
Yeah, I think it's really just isolated to especially one and two, partly three. And I think, again, that just has to do with the directing and the writing. Because George Lucas, he's just not a writer. Like, I think he has good ideas. Like, I think a lot of the themes he's trying to tackle in this movie and the third are very interesting. I just don't think he really, like, knew fully how to capture those themes in dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dialogue is not his forte. Yeah.
Which is why the originals are so good, because it was like a fully collaborative effort between him and other writers and directors.
It's true, yeah. Overall, I would say that number two kind of is, it falls into the pitfalls that a lot of like middle films of a trilogy kind of do, which is, I don't know, it feels like a lot of it is setting up for the third film.
Yes.
And not a lot of its own content, you know. There are memorable moments, there are important moments, but I think that I find that a lot of it is really kind of just, I don't know, like building towards the inevitable betrayal and finale of the third film.
No, I totally
agree. I think the best sequences in this movie are the ones that are kind of separate from the plot line, I guess, from that plot line. Like when they have the battle or whatever at the end in the arena and stuff. Because that feels like a cool sequence to me. And then kind of in the beginning, and then the other, like, battle stuff with, like, Django. I think that's all really cool. And then you kind of, all those middle parts where it's like, oh, we have to move the plot along. That's right. It can't just be these
the fun times. No fun times.
Yeah, I think that's where it gets more messy than fun, I guess.
Yep. Yep. I think, that's a great transition to the third movie, I think, because a lot of in two is just set up for the third one. And we finally get a lot of payoffs, which I think is good. But it sucks for, like, the people that were watching two, and it's like, oh, so now I guess this was all just set up for the next movie, which, so, is a thing now more than it was then. But who wants to read? Do you want to read this opening crawl, Sterling, or I can read it?
I'll give it a go.
Oh, fantastic.
Let's try it. War! The Republic is crumbling under attacks by the ruthless Sith Lord Count Dooku. There are heroes on both sides. Evil is everywhere. In a stunning move, the fiendish droid leader General Grievous has swept into the Republic capital and kidnapped Chancellor Palpatine, leader of the Galactic Senate. As the Separatist droid army attempts to flee the besieged capital with their valuable hostage, two Jedi Knights lead a desperate mission to rescue the captive Chancellor.
Ah, so nice. What I don't understand about this crawl is who are the heroes on both sides? Because there's heroes on both sides, but who's the hero on the Sith side?
Yeah, it sounds like you're playing both sides to me there.
Drove the truck through the...
Yeah, they're good people. They're five people.
Donald Trump said, oh, I've seen Star Wars. I know how this works. There's heroes on both sides.
Yeah. Gosh. Noah, you bring up a really good point, because it says there are heroes on both sides. Evil is everywhere. If evil is everywhere, how are there heroes on both sides?
I think I don't know. Maybe it's saying, like, they don't know that, like, Palpatine is... Maybe they don't know that Palpatine is bad, so he's the hero. Like, evil is everywhere.
But that would imply that there were villains on both sides.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, Anakin. Maybe Anakin is the hero that's on both sides.
I think if it said there are villains on both sides, that would make more sense. Because I think that's really the theme of this, is that there's no really good versus evil, especially in the first half. It's more like showing... I don't know, like, Anakin's disillusionment with the Jedi and then his subsequent turn to the dark side. So I think the point is that everyone is kind of corrupt in this, except for Obi-Wan, because he's great.
Mm-hmm. I think the coolest thing about this is, like, you get the opening crawl and you read the fiendish droid leader, General Grievous. You're like, okay, there's a droid leader. That's so scary. And then you get... lightsabers.
Then we meet General Grievous.
He is so cool. Great design. Yeah. I think all the creature designs and new character designs in these movies are cool, but General Grievous is, like, one of the best.
He is out of this world cool. I think that, I mean, that's what I was about to say, was with the advent of Grievous and, like the beginning when they, like, auto-kill Dooku, and I think that there are so many cool parts of this movie. I think a lot of people mainly agree that this is maybe the best of the prequel trilogy, but I genuinely love this movie.
It's good.
Like, through and through.
I think it's a good movie.
I think it's awesome. Awesome film.
Like I said, it was my first exposure to the Star Wars, and I don't remember a whole lot of it, but going back and rewatching it, I do actually get, like, a small sense of, like, I remember thinking this was, like, just really cool. And that's, I think, the biggest part about this trilogy is that when it all comes down to it, who cares about all the writing and stuff? It's cool.
Yeah, that's some cool stuff.
It's fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I think this movie is just, so epic, so wide scale. I think it's very ambitious narratively. I think the first half especially is very good. Probably some of the best, like, thematic elements of any Star Wars movie, in my opinion. I love all... This is, like, when I actually do like the religious kind of metaphor stuff with the Jedi, and kind of Anakin's kind of, like, disillusionment there, and then with Palpatine. I think it's really
it's
well done.
So interesting. His whole, like, battle of Palpatine being like, this is good, and Anakin keeps flipping back and forth between, like, this is the Jedi way, though, and this is not the Jedi way, and it has to be this way because he's battling with all those values he was, like, raised with.
And the things that are, like, he's working so hard to get to this place of Jedi Master, and then he kind of just realizes how much of a lie that is and, like, how fake it is. And also with, like, the elders, like, the Jedi Masters, that's, like, the older kind of generation, kind of like, I don't know, dismissing the younger. I think it's really good, really well done with that. I actually think they lean a little too much on the Padme thing for his betrayal.
Oh my God,
it should have been,
don't even get me started.
I think it should have been fully, most, like, the main thrust should have been the Jedi thing.
And his wanting more power and stuff. Because I think the Padme stuff is fine, but then it just kept coming up where Palpatine's, like... Because I just watched it today, and Palpatine keeps being like, I know someone who can bring people back to life. And it just, like, kept being repeated over and over, like, you could save her, you could save someone, she could be saved. And it was like, alright, we get it. You have this manipulative power.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that my problem with it isn't really the thing itself. I think that Padme, like, he keeps on having these reoccurring dreams that Padme's gonna die, etc., etc. I think that's fine. I have no problem with that. In fact, I like it because it's a new manifestation of
I think
the force that
works.
Yeah, I think it's a good element to add.
But I think that the problem is what you guys are saying, is how heavy-handed it is. I also, I do not like what they do with Padme throughout the trilogy. She starts out as, like, this badass, like rebel leader.
Yes.
And then very quickly falls into, you know, she's kind of just a wife. I think not to say that there's anything wrong with being a wife. I mean,
I know what you're saying, just, though. Because she was so good in the first.
That's her only that's the only character trait that they give her. That's what it is. Like, she's nothing else besides that, which is what's frustrating. Because she's cool in the second one, somewhat. Kind of. And then you get to the third one, and it's like, you know, the first time we see her is when they're in this, like, corridor, and he's like, "Are you all right? You're trembling." But he really says it like, "Are you all right? You're trembling." And she's like, "I have some great news to share." And then it's like, from the get-go, that's her brand, then, is being pregnant.
Well, the whole thing is, her whole reason for being in this movie is to give birth to the twins. Like, that's her only real... I mean, she also obviously serves as Anakin's kind of one of... I mean, his main motive, I think, really, to turn to the dark side. But I think, like, her role is just the
Yeah, birth. And she's always been semi-emotional, but I feel like she's also, in the previous movies, been a lot more grounded in her emotions. Like, she is a very... Well, I shouldn't say very. She's a somewhat rational character. And in this one, it's like, it's, you know, C-3PO comes in and he's like, "Anakin has returned, you know, to the Jedi Palace," or whatever it's called. And she's like, "Oh," and then starts crying. And it's like, why is she crying? Like, I get that she's, like, scared, but, like, this has not ever been a character trait of hers before. And it just, like... It's very frustrating.
There's a trope in feminist theory and critique called fridging. And it's when a woman specifically is killed off. And that spurs, like, the beginning of the journey or the heroic plot for typically... the male lead to go on and either enact revenge or
serving as the male emotional core. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was Anakin's whole thing with his mom being killed too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they fridged his mom for the beginning of the trilogy, and then fridged Padme to retroactively set up the next.
Yeah. The rest of the movies, really. Yeah. I mean,
let's kill some women.
Yeah.
Is what Star Wars.
But not just the women, but the men and the children too.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't glaze over that, can we?
Yeah.
Anakin kills them all. But, like, here's the thing. I think it's harder when he kills the children, obviously, in the third one. Because, you know, they address him as Master Skywalker, so you know that they know him.
Interesting.
I think it's... I mean, not that it's easy to stomach him slaughtering an entire village of sand people, but I think it's not as, like, when he kills the Jedi Padawans, then you're like, oh my god, he's really bad now. But it's like, he also mass murdered a lot of other people.
Yeah, he already killed children.
This.
Yeah, for me, I can't take it seriously when Obi-Wan's sitting on the couch and like, "We have video evidence that he killed younglings." And she's like, "Younglings? No!" It's like,
and
what?
The best part about that scene is, I don't know if it's a fun fact on our Wikipedia fun facts list, but the best part about that particular scene is that Ewan McGregor covers his mouth, when he says "younglings" or something like that. And it's because he's laughing.
Right.
It's because he breaks.
You can't say younglings without laughing. They could have just said Padawans. Like, I don't know why.
Right,
the younglings.
Right.
The younglings.
Younglings.
was an interesting choice.
My favorite line is when they get trapped in that bubble thing, and Obi-Wan's just like, "Wait a minute, how did this happen? We're smarter than this. It's like the most deadpan delivery of like a line ever. But it's like the line itself is just also very bad.
It's a very bad line.
Because in a film, you want to be thinking ahead. Generally, there's moments where you don't want to sit there and call attention to the fact that you
be like, wait a minute, how did this happen?
That's what George Lucas was saying when he was watching his movies. He was like, how did this happen?
All right, wait a minute.
We're smarter than this.
I do think the so opening hard. Like 23 minutes is actually like one of my favorite like sequences in the in the prequels. I think it's the best opening. It's very well paced and it sets up everything, and I don't know, it's just really fun. It's like probably the most consistently fun section of these movies for me is that opening like 20 minutes.
Well, and then it ends thematically so well with the Dooku decapitation.
Yeah, and that like sets up his whole journey there. Yeah.
Well, and we were going from grand to specific, but now I'm just going to go back to grand for a moment and say that, like, a lot of this film feels to me like what I wish the whole trilogy felt like.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, I wish that we were getting hints throughout the entire series that, oh, you know, like, this guy isn't great and he's really susceptible to... and I think that we get lots of like moments where like, oh, he's hot-headed. But being hot-headed doesn't mean that he's bad.
And then he got literally hot-headed.
Oh!
Oh my god.
That was the reason I think that this was the first PG-13 Star Wars film was that scene. I mean, they did it. It's a pretty, like, they hold on him for a while.
Yeah, I remember watching the Anakin burning scene as a child, and that like specific shot of him like and then his like it was burned into my memory.
I gotta say though, the whole Darth Vader sequence is a real disappointment. It's like the whole thing is building to this and it's just very badly done. I think I don't know,
it's very melodramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like up until that point we were like seeing lots of actual dramatic moments and dramatic stuff happening on screen, we get to that moment and it's pure melodrama.
Yeah,
bad writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which sucks because so much of this movie is done really well with that. Like, it's very dramatic and that feels like it kind of takes you out of it a little bit, especially at the end.
Absolutely, that's exactly what I was kind of saying before, which is that, I mean, we get all of the really great, meaty, dramatic character development in this film that we just don't get in the other two films, like, at all.
That could have been stretched out a lot more.
That could have been stretched out a lot more. And I think that, you know, I don't know, I think that maybe they traded good character development for interesting visuals in the first two films. But I don't know, I just feel like it would have been a cooler journey overall if we had gotten it stretched out.
Yeah, it's Noah mentioned earlier, we really see George Lucas come into his own as a director over this trilogy. Like, obviously this isn't perfect, but it's definitely a lot better, and I think that has a lot to do with it, is that he started to realize the importance of just not being flashy with your tech, and that people still like all of the tech and this cool computer generated imagery in the world won't make up for not being able to connect with a character.
Exactly.
Because we're so emotional, we love to connect. And yeah, had that been a huge focus from the beginning, I think even like the most janky of CGI scenes would have still been really good.
Yeah, because you can still connect to them. If you can connect emotionally, the CGI is kind of like almost your brain kind of fills it in, you know.
Exactly.
It's just giving your brain a like a vehicle for your imagination to kind of take off. But when I'm not invested, I just kind of can't get into that.
I will say, I do think that the Obi-Wan and Anakin fight, like, visually is really, like, I love the setting.
It's so
much.
It's so cool. It's a great fight.
Yeah.
It is.
It is a good fight. Here's, you know, with the Mace Windu purple lightsaber real quick, You know, because I think Mace Windu is obviously not, like, a great like, he's definitely one of the bad Jedi, like, if they're trying to do the bad good thing. I think with him, what they were doing with the purple lightsaber, too, because, I mean, I know he asked for it, so this is just me kind of, like, theorizing for fun. But, you know, they have the blue is the good in this movie, and the red is the bad, so purple is the combination of blue and red.
Yeah. That's canon, actually.
Wow.
That's,
look at me.
That's actual, like, that's Star Wars lore canon, is that well, I should say, I don't know if it's 100% canon, like, with the new revised canon, but it used to be part of the extended canon, which was that Mace Windu uses both the Force and the dark side of the Force. And that is why, and he's able to channel both, but he chooses to be a Jedi because he wants to be good, and he wants to be a good person. I mean, and I think that's a really, I mean, probably a ridiculous explanation for why Samuel L. Jackson wanted a cool lightsaber look. But I think in the end, I mean, that's what Star Wars is just like nerds taking weird decisions very seriously.
Right. Kind of weird to have the only Black Jedi be the one that's like half bad, but you know, a choice was made.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay, but if you had a lightsaber, which lightsaber color would you be? I feel like we need to ask. I feel like we need to ask all our guests this.
Can I pick any color, or does it have to be like a color from the movies?
Like a rainbow, like.
Yeah, I guess you can pick any color.
Okay, I know mine. Purple is my favorite color, and so I think if I like had to choose, I would like go with purple, but I don't want to be seen trying to emulate Samuel L. Jackson because I'll never be that cool.
Exactly.
Fair.
I normally don't like this color, but for some reason I feel like it would be really fun as a lightsaber, but I'd like a yellow lightsaber.
Yeah.
And I don't just know like why. It just for some reason speaks to
like
me.
Like Rey Skywalker.
Just like Rey Skywalker.
This is getting into the shows, but I don't know. There's just something about the Darksaber that looks so cool. So I'm going to have to go with black. It's not a lightsaber.
It's a Darksaber.
But it's a lightsaber.
It is really cool, yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
I don't know what I would do. This is tough. I mean, blue's my favorite color.
I could see you being a blue lightsaber guy.
But here's the thing. I don't really like the shade of blue they're using as much. It would have to be maybe like a little darker.
That's
like
fine.
A darker, like a more of a royal blue.
Not super dark, but like in between, you know? So not like a denim, but not like a teal. Kayla, what about you?
So I used to be a red lightsaber person.
Red lightsabers are cool.
Like, yeah, I was like really into being, you know, I thought it was cool to be on the dark side and like, but they get to wear all black. I mean,
yeah,
come
the
on.
Sith have the better drip. It's not a lie.
Yeah, they look cooler. I thought that the red lightsabers looked cooler, but I have evolved as a person. I believe I would be green lightsaber person.
Blue and green, like, both of us.
Yeah, like I would wield the green.
You know what that makes you?
What?
That makes you Noah Skywalker and Kayla Skywalker.
Oh my gosh.
We're all Skywalkers.
My ancestors, the Skywalkers.
Okay, so just any like overall final thoughts on the prequels here, you know, we've talked a lot about the goods and the bads, but anything you want to say before we sign off?
I, as one of the least knowledgeable people here on the Star Wars universe.
Debatable.
Oh, I know nothing.
Debatable.
No.
Jacob's
okay.
The only one that knows.
So we could share the title.
Yes.
I love how Star Wars is such like always such a hot topic in media, and here we are admitting that we know nothing and still talking about it.
Yeah, I see the movies. I think space is cool. That's
I think opera is cool.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, it's obviously there are issues with it, and it's hard to ignore them, but when it boils down to it, It is a technological marvel, and it's so much fun. There's a lot of really
fun
stuff that they put into it, and they obviously cared a lot about how it looked, and it's a charming piece of film history. That's my take.
Yeah, I think, like, when you don't take them too seriously, you can have a really good time with them. Because if you're just, like, watching them and you want to tear it all apart and break everything down and be like, oh, this is, you know, messed up this canon and very smart. I can't believe they did this. And it's like, that is just so frustrating to me, even though I do that with Rise of Skywalker. With these movies, I feel like you kind of just got to take what you were given and be like, sure, some of this stuff is probably not as good as it could have been. Or maybe even is just straight up bad. But they're so fun, especially with friends, like to sit down and laugh at,
as I watched,
you know,
all of these
things
alone
that are happening. hey, there's a pandemic right
truly,
now, so
yeah,
you did the right thing.
I think I pretty much agree. I don't feel that way about number one. I think number one is just not a good movie, but I think two and three, three I think is good, and I think two has aspects that, like, especially with friends, it's like you can enjoy it. I mean, especially with all the memes, like I had a fun time like waiting for all of them. You know, it's like an Easter egg at this point. Yeah, I think they're cool. I think it's definitely opened up a lot of doors for visual effects and digital cinematography. And I think they're definitely just too hated on. And I think there's definitely people coming around on that now, which is good, because I think that there are good aspects, but definitely not as good as the originals.
They're messy, but I like them.
Yeah, that's basically
it. Those are my thoughts. Yeah.
As people start to develop their own opinions separate from the internet, they realize that. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that overall, I just, you know, if I feel like watching, I mean, because that's the thing, is that I occasionally feel like watching a Star Wars movie. And occasionally, when I feel like watching a Star Wars movie, I want to watch one of the prequels.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know? And yeah. I think that... You know, I think I have lots of analytical and filmmaking thoughts about them, but, you know, I don't know if they're the kind of movies that, like, really benefit from that kind of discussion. I say that as I'm on a movie podcast with you guys.
Right.
But I think that the enjoyment of them can be isolated from, like you kind of said earlier, but, like, tearing them apart and, like, dissecting them and really like talking all about them. I think that, you know, sometimes you can, there are definitely movies that you can just turn your brain off to and just say, I like the floating things.
Lightsabers.
I like the pretty colors. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's definitely just sums it up in a great way. So that was a great episode. Thank you guys for being on this first episode of the Summer of Star Wars. We'll have another episode at the beginning of June on the original trilogy, so stay tuned for that one. Very exciting.
Heck yeah.
Do you guys want to like plug either like socials or then the podcast, just anything you would want to plug?
No, it's a mystery.
Nice. All right, yeah, cool. Have fun finding it.
Totally. No, so we, Jacob and I, like we said, we run a gaming podcast. It's called Up Up Download. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Up Up Download. And then our personal tweeters are on there as well. I'm Sterling M. Oliver, and he is Hebrew He-Man, which I think is the funniest thing in the world still.
I've had it forever, and I'm never changing it.
Perfect. We'll put those in the show notes, so if you wanna go check those out, then just go down there.
Yeah, if video games are your thing, then listen.
You know,
yep.
There's pretty much just the amount. There's like the exact same amount of digital effects in video games as there are in these movies. So, you know,
basically,
some of these scenes are basically just video game cutscenes.
Yeah.
All right. So you can also follow us on all your social media platforms. Just search Secondhand Film Critics. You'll find us there. If you have thoughts on the prequels, Kayla, what can they do if they have thoughts?
You can email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com.
What is our next episode? We're covering another just historic
the
trilogy.
The greatest trilogy of all time.
Yeah.
The greatest
blows
film
the prequels
trilogy
out of the water
ever made. It will be the High School Musical trilogy.
Yeah. We're doing this because season 2 of the new show is coming out, and me and Kayla are unashamed
big
fans.
I didn't know they were making season 2. I loved season 1.
Yes.
It comes out next week.
I'm excited. We've been wanting to talk about this trilogy for a while on the podcast, so.
Because it's my favorite trilogy of all time.
It's the best trilogy of all time.
Best trilogy ever made.
I'll be tuning in the day it comes out.
Same.
Very nice. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
I'm Sterling.
And I'm Jacob.
And
we're your second-hand
film critics.